This is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Melissa Block. When Paul Simon rehearses with his band, you can hear his extreme devotion to detail. You might call it obsessiveness. For hours, the band works through just one song over and over.
What's happening there? Why don't I hear bigger change? I'm trying to hear if we change texture enough.
During a break in the rehearsal, I sat down to talk with Paul Simon. He had one of his guitars alongside him, a custom-made Martin. Do you want to play something?
Play something? I don't know what to play.
The fingernails on his right finger-picking hand are kept long, they're immaculate, and as he noodled around, he found something he liked.
Well, that's nice.
Paul Simon, at age 64, has a new album titled Surprise, and for the first time he worked with Brian Eno, the pioneer of ambient electronic music. His credit reads Sonic Landscape by Brian Eno, and you can hear his influence right from the first notes on the CD. Paul Simon told me it took a while for him and Brian Eno to get used to each other's pace.
I said to him, "Let me ask you this, do you think I'm obsessive?" And he said, definitely. You know, and I said, well, I agree completely. I said, but so are you. And that's really what I want. I think you have to repeat and think about things for so long that it doesn't have anything to do with boredom. It's really catering to your obsessive nature or desire in the creative process. And I say to myself, look, if I just want to spend forever on this, then I will. So that's what I wanted for Brian to do as well, was to take as much time as he wanted with his sounds. I really wanted it to be fun. I wanted him to say, I really look forward to working with Paul because I get to do whatever I want. And that's pretty close to how we worked.
You have your guitar, one of your guitars with you here today, and I wonder maybe you can demonstrate a bit how one of these songs evolved. I've been listening a lot to the song Another Galaxy, which he has a co-writing credit on, mm-hmm. Brian Eno does. Do you remember what the root of that song was?
Uh-huh, I do. At that point in the record, I already knew that I was looking for songs in certain keys. I think about key relationships all the time from the beginning of the record onward. So in this particular case, I said to him, he said, I have a sound that I like a lot. And I said, well, okay, but make it in the E flat. So he created this loop. So then he said, just play against it. And I said, well, I don't know what to play. And he said, well, you just play anything. So I played really the simplest of chords, you know. Like that. Which is just a... Which is a chord progression that's very—it's very old. It's really like it's the typical 50s chord progression.
What are those chords?
In this particular case, there it's E flat, C minor, A flat, B flat. But the one chord to the 6 minor to the 4 chord to the 5 chord was the basis of all doo-wop, just about all doo-wop stuff, and it was very typical. So when I wrote that, I thought, I'm just putting this down just to play anything because I'm not going to keep this because it belongs to a certain era. And I wouldn't want to begin by being in that era. I don't want to have a particular time frame. When it came time to write the song, the way the guitar sounded and the way it all fit together made me feel that I didn't really want to change it. So I wrote a song that I thought would be appropriate to these old chords. And it was the song about the girl who ran away on her wedding day. It was that kind of almost country type of song from a certain period of time.
On the morning of her wedding day, when no one was awake, she drove across the border, leaving all the yellow roses on her wedding cake. Her mother's tears, her breakfast order. She's gone, gone, gone.
It's almost like a little movie.
Because of what the story is,
yeah.
Right. But for me, the movie, play, or short story, or whatever the analogy that sometimes people apply to the songs that I write, the music is a separate conversation or story that's being told at the same time as the words. Sometimes I use the music ironically, and sometimes I'll let the words flow right with the music. In this case, there's really no irony in the story. And it was a very emotional story. And I think if you get to something that's emotional and without irony, then anything that comes from the 50s is appropriate, because the 50s doesn't have any irony, really. It just has an emotion that is now, in retrospect, you know, very touching because of its innocence. Well, anyway, that's how I think when I decide that I'm going to keep something that I was about to throw out because it belonged to another era.
Was there a song that started with a line on the guitar,
mm-hmm,
that you could demonstrate for us?
This song. That's the guitar part of Wartime Prayers. I finished writing the guitar piece, and I liked it a lot. And then I started to try and find what the melody would be to the song. I mean, the way I write is sometimes described as backwards, because I make up the accompaniment and then write the melody and the words. But that song took a long time. I knew what I was going to write about because I started writing it before the invasion of Iraq. So I knew, you know, vaguely what the subject matter was. Didn't know entirely. So that went along, that took a long time to find, just by trial and error and re-singing and reshaping the words until I could find what it was going to be about.
People hungry for the voice of God. Hear lunatics and lies. Wartime prayers. Wartime prayers in every language spoken, for every family scattered and broken. You cannot walk with the holy if you're just a halfway decent man. I don't pretend that I'm a mastermind with a genius marketing plan. I'm trying to tap into some wisdom, even a little drop would do. I want to rid my heart of envy and cleanse my soul of rage before I.
There's a verse at the very end, it's almost a little coda, of a woman kissing her babies, singing them to sleep, I think.
Right.
Do you remember how that part of the song came to you?
That's Yeats. Not that there's those lines are in Yeats, but I think I was reading Yeats before I went to sleep then. I think he used the word hushabye, and that's how the mother and the lullaby and that word came in there.
A mother murmurs in twilight sleep and draws her babies closer with hushabyes for sleepy eyes and kisses on the shoulder to drive away despair. She sells a wartime prayer.
Talked before about going through dry spells as a songwriter. Have you come to terms with the fact that there are dry spells, or is that just always something that's a frustrating thing?
They're really not dry spells. That's just the rhythm of how I write, and you don't seem to be able to influence it by trying harder or pushing or anything. This time around, because I was writing post 9/11 and because I had passed my 60th birthday, I was more than usually immobilized and having to think about just what it was that I wanted to say in a world that was permanently altered. And also, given the fact that I was, you know, I'm writing in popular music, which is most of the time you'd be out of popular music by this age. Getting into it and being a songwriter was an idea that I had when I was 14. And now I'm still doing this same idea. It was a 14-year-old's idea. So I have to ask myself all the time if that's still what I feel like I should be doing. And usually, I mean, always, I answer, yeah, I do, I like it.
Paul Simon, it's good to meet you. Thanks very much.
Thank you for having me.
Paul Simon's new CD is titled Surprise. You can hear more from the album and more of our conversation about crafting lyrics at npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.